You know, there's this specific moment that happens when a jeweler sees a jewel sprint casting tree for the first time.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The stare.
The stare, exactly. They see this massive, dense structure, dozens of rings spiraling up, and they're just blown away. But
Yep.
then the skepticism kicks in.
Yep. And then comes the question.
Okay, that looks incredible, but how am I supposed to print that without it failing?
It's a completely rational reaction. I mean, you're looking at an industrial scale structure, a literal forest of models, and you're thinking about your standard desktop resin printer.
Right. It feels like trying to park a semi truck in a space for a compact car. So today, we're going to dig into a stack of technical docs and case studies from JulesFrint. Our mission is to figure out the four key architectural innovations they developed.
And this is the important part. It's not just about nesting things better. They basically built an automated engineering system to get around the physical limits of the hardware itself.
Let's start with the most obvious one, height. You have a 10-inch tree, but your printer's Z-axis only goes up to, say, 6 inches. You're stuck. But the docs mention something called the modular stack.
Exactly. So the software knows your printer's limits. It doesn't even try to print one giant monolith. Instead, it intelligently slices the main sprue, the trunk of the tree, into segments.
So instead of printing a skyscraper, you're printing, what, a few shorter buildings side by side?
Precisely. You print these pucks, as they're sometimes called, all at once on the build plate. It solves the height problem, sure, but it also, drastically cuts your print time.
Because speed is all about height, not width.
Right.
Okay, but my immediate concern there is post-processing.
Mm.
A dense tree like that, cleaning the models in the center seems like a total nightmare. You can't even reach them.
And that's the second kind of hidden genius of the stack. Because it's disassembled, you suddenly have 360-degree access to every single ring. You can clean them properly, remove all the supports.
And then you assemble it.
Then you just snap the segments together. They have these little mechanical locks built right in.
All right, that handles the trunk of the tree. But what about the branches? You've got all these delicate rings packed so tightly. How do you even get supports in there without them crashing into other models?
This is where intelligent pathfinding comes in. And it's so cool. Traditional software just drops blind vertical pillars, straight lines that just go up and hit whatever's in the way.
Which would absolutely ruin a piece of jewelry if it hits a detailed surface.
It would destroy it. So JulesPrint uses math, basically, to draw these organic curves. Think of the supports less like scaffolding and more like vines.
Vines, okay, I like that visual.
They literally grow upwards, curving and snaking around the jewelry to find a safe, empty spot to anchor on the base plate. No collisions.
But what if there's no pass? What if a ring is just floating in the middle of this dense cluster?
Then it uses what's called body-to-body supports. It'll find a stable part of a neighboring model, or even the main sprue itself, and anchor the floating piece directly to it.
Wait, you're connecting models to each other? Doesn't that mess with how the metal flows during casting?
You'd think so, but it actually helps. Those connections act like auxiliary vanes for the molten metal. So you get two benefits. It stabilizes the print and it improves the metal flow.
A very clever two for one. Speaking of flow, let's talk about the actual geometry of the tree. The docs really highlight this 20 to 30 degree rule. Why that angle?
It all comes down to efficiency. Old school trees often used 45 or even 90 degree branches. But if you hold your arm out at 90 degrees, it gets heavy, right? You need something to prop it up.
And that prop is just wasted resin.
Wasted resin, wasted time. By tilting the sprue steeply to 20 or 30 degrees, it becomes a self-supporting ramp. You don't need all that extra scaffolding underneath. It's nearly zero waste.
But there's more to it, isn't there? Something about being hydrodynamic.
Chuckles. Yeah, it sounds funny. We're not building boats. But liquid metal acts a lot like water. Sharp corners create turbulence.
And turbulence means trapped air.
Which means porosity, those tiny bubbles that can ruin a cast. These steep, curved paths create what's called laminar flow. It's just a smooth, gentle entry for the metal.
Okay, so the geometry saves resin and improves the final cast. But geometry is one thing, physics is another. We're printing with soft, high-wax resins. I've heard horror stories about noodling.
Ah, yes, the sway. It's the enemy of accuracy. If that tree sways even a little bit during the print, your rings come out warped. And this is where the fourth innovation, precision detection, is so critical. The software literally runs a physics simulation before you even hit print.
It's checking the math on its own structure.
It's calculating all the weight, the peel forces, everything. If it detects a potential weak spot, it automatically applies load balance bracing. It builds supports with these wide, sturdy bases for stability.
But they have to be easy to remove.
Exactly. So they taper down to a tiny tip, less than 0.3 millimeters, where they actually touch the model. You get the rigidity of a thick support, but you can still just peel it off with your thumb.
That's the best of both worlds.
It even does intelligent merging. If two supports are heading in the same general direction, it'll merge them into one stronger trunk and only split them at the very end. It keeps everything rigid without wasting resin.
So, to recap here.
Yeah.
We have the modular stack for heightened cleaning, intelligent pathfinding to navigate the clutter, the 20-30-degree rule for flow and waste, and then physics simulations to stop the wobble.
It completely takes the guesswork out of it. It really shifts jewelry printing from, you know, manually placing things and hoping for the best to automated architectural engineering.
It really does sound like it turns a standard desktop machine into a miniature factory.
That's exactly what it does.
But here's the question I want to leave you with. If software can turn a $500 printer into an industrial casting engine, what does that mean for the massive factories? When industrial scale can fit on a desktop, does mass manufacturing suddenly become local again? Something to think about. Thanks for listening to this deep dive.